Welcome back, it's Podcast with a K. We're back from the summer break, and there's loads of stuff going on that I would like to tell you about, and I'm not going to tell you about just now. This is Christian Corney, and I'm joined this week by Gareth Gavanna. I will tell you, however, that Gareth and I have just talked about maybe recording some more in the near future, and I've also arranged some podcast recording time with a gentleman called Brian Terranova. So that will be fun when that happens in October. Gareth, how are you?
I thought you were going to tell them all about your greenhouse then. You were just telling me about it. I was very excited. None of this. You didn't tell me about any of this. The greenhouse.
No. I don't think the greenhouse is that interesting at the moment.
Very interesting. Never underestimate the power of a greenhouse to entrance and amaze in conversation.
The Casterbridge Towers greenhouse.
Yes. Your green cathedral.
I could play all day. Gareth, what have you been up to, matey? You've been to Edinburgh and everywhere.
I have. You know, we went to Edinburgh last month and that for the Fringe, and that feels like about 1,000 years ago now. Feels like it never happened. But we went up there with our Douglas Adams play, We Apologise, and sitcom stories as well. It was great. So we spent a week up there performing, pitching, punting, seeing other stuff. Amazing. Really,
we got some good reviews as well.
We got some lovely reviews. I think the thing with ours is that's satisfying is the Adams fans, they get it. They know it. They love it. But we're actually getting people who don't necessarily know who Douglas Adams was so much, who just are enjoying it as a piece. So really good. The idea is to go back next year with it again, as it's our 42nd anniversary. Ours, it's the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I must mention at this point, dear listener, I only woke up 10 minutes ago. So I'm just starting on my first cup of tea. So the mighty engine is not quite up to speed yet. But it will be.
Engine sounds like it should have been a retro video game. But do continue, sorry.
Well, no, the mighty engine is a quote from, that's Gene Hunt, always says, you know, you need to start the mighty engine. And it's usually either with a pint or a cup of tea.
Yes.
So it's a bit early for a pint. So a cup of tea will do the job. We're going back next year with We Apologise and with a brand new play about Dennis Potter, which should be a treat. And hopefully with a second set sitcom story. So you'll see even more of it in Edinburgh next year. So it'll be good.
Yeah, that's quite good.
I've been fixing arcade machines for what seems like forever. In my cave, surrounded by androids and nutrition and, you know, all of the good fun. But yeah, that's been me. What about you?
There was a day where I thought we might actually come up to Edinburgh and grab one of your showings, actually. But that didn't transpire. We did something else instead. Generally speaking, lots of days out, really, during the summer, basically. Lots of interesting places I've been to before. Nice place down near York that was in it's a country house, can't remember the name of it at the moment, and was an air base during the war. It wasn't an air base. It was used by the RAF. The actual base was like a mile away. Places like that, been over to Windermere. I went on a comedy script writing workshop event last Saturday.
Hey, you kept that quiet, you sly dog.
With Bennett Aaron.
I don't know.
Running that. He's a TV... He's done bits for Have I Got News For You and shows like that, Mock the Week and other things. He's in something on the radio at the moment that Angus Deaton's in as well. But I can't remember what that's called. So that was good. I didn't keep it quiet. I just didn't tell anyone I was going.
Well, I guess, I have those conversations where you never ask.
Didn't come up. Are you going to any comedy writing workshops lately? No, not really. No one asks you, do they? So.
No. Oh, that's good. Well done. He's a good writer, listener, on the sly. Keeps it quiet.
Yeah, possibly. possibly. Yeah, so yeah, I've been doing a bit of that. Yeah, just a general summer, really, I think.
Yeah, sort of summerish, and yeah, so it's kind of all vanished now. And you know, this is supposed to be Doctor Who time, isn't it? I mean, it's
it
about
is. There isn't any.
4 years ago, that Destiny of the Daleks was on, and I was just—that's where it all changed. Yeah, that was the most exciting thing I think I'd ever seen at that point.
Yeah, I remember Destiny of the Daleks going out, but I remember being Daleks, and that was the first time I'd seen Daleks.
Mm.
I remember very little else apart of it, other than that. My starker memories from Doctor Who come the following season. So, yeah, the 1979 run doesn't really...
Well, earliest memories are the are men in curtains giving lofty speeches. Oh dear! Surprised you stayed with it. We should be doing a Buck Rogers podcast at this moment.
Well, no, my earliest memory is from my earliest memories. Key to Time. My very earliest memory. I know because I remember the. I remember when I first watched it off UK Gold back in about 93, 94. I sat there watching, think I've seen this. I've seen this. I don't remember this. I've seen this. I know I've seen this. You know that you have that feeling of recognition. You don't know what's going to happen next. You have that intense feeling of recognition, and it feels all comfortable and familiar in that without actually knowing what's going to happen next. So, yeah, Keep the Time. I definitely remember, at the very least, The Pirate Planet.
Well, my earliest memory is probably The Deadly Assassin.
Wow.
I've been watching Doctor Who before that. But it's only a sort of... The things I remember are the Master's horrible burnt face and then vivid fried egg eyes. That very well. I remember the whole look and feel of Gallifrey and the Dreamscape episode. I remember that very well. I don't remember the ending at all. It's just a little moment and an old Castellan Spandrel being, or whatever his name, not Spandrel, it's it's whoever's stuff at the film can. It's the guard, I think. So I remember all that. And then after that, I certainly remember the first Leela ones very well. Although you never know if you remember them better, because I think Robots of Death was repeated. So you remember that one. Remember that one very well. And the same with the Key to Time, because they repeated the Pirate Planet. So I definitely remember that well. Good times. And yeah, it's funny how those little moments kind of sear in. And you don't know through, or if you're re-remembering them, or if you're actually remembering reading the Target book and then remembering what it was like. But no, I definitely remember the Master's crispy face. So
how old were you then in 76 when Deadly Assassin went out? Were you three?
Assassin, I would have been three or four.
Yeah, so now I was around three when Pirate Planet went out.
Lovely.
Mm, yeah,
that's quality. Yeah, but obviously my parents let me watch it, although I suspect they were too busy running the hotel, so I didn't know what I was. That was great. Every now and again, my mother would try and say, oh, no, you shouldn't be watching this. And I'd obviously blow such a tantrum that they'd decide it was easier just to let me watch it.
You know, there's a group of people of a certain age who spent years thinking that particular shows were in colour and other shows were in black and white. So for me, Doctor Who was always in colour. Return of the Saint was always in black and white, and I didn't know it was in colour until a well-known Doctor Who illustrator named Anthony Dry gave me the DVDs of Return of the Saint. I'd never seen it in colour.
I watched it at your nan's, and she only had a black and white telly.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? What?
I mean, most people will have watched the Pertwee era in black and white. That's the brutality of them going to all this effort of restoring it into, you know, into exquisite colour. Is that most people's experience would have been as black and white.
Yeah, and a lot of the special effects work look far better in black and white, of course.
Well, they do. It's one of the things I'm finding with these new Blu-rays, like Planet of the Daleks was a classic example. How unkind this sort of upscaling to broadcast master quality really is, you know, because the people making it, if they were taping things down, and really just doing a quick coat of paint as opposed to a loving three or four coats on your console, it looks dreadful. It looks really dreadful on our modern tellies. But on that 19-inch, 21-inch black and white set, even a colour set, it would have looked absolutely fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the old black and white TV with a dial on it, just trying to get it tuned in to get that perfect picture, which you never can get. So there's always a little bit of interference there while you're watching it.
Oh, always. I've also realised that the past was a very dusty place looking at these old Blu-rays. The amount of dust in the TARDIS in particular is extremely impressive. Popper, you have a look at the top of the time rotor. It's usually thicker.
Has it come out of Pertwee's hair?
Well, you do wonder, but they're lucky no one put a little smiley face in the dust. You know, like I always do, you know. Or, you know, if you think my TARDIS is, I'm not going to say it. But some of the things you see on the back of the trucks, you know.
Yeah. If you think my TARDIS is bad, you should see my girlfriend's Vortex.
That's the one I was thinking of, but, you know. Yeah, it's so I suppose this is the problem, that Doctor Who was never meant to be ingested in such high res, loving, obsessive manner. It was literally supposed to be, as the mighty Terence Dick said, although he was always a bit disingenuous there with his, it was supposed to be something that stopped them putting the test card on for half an hour. I like to think that their ambition was a bit higher, but not much.
Well, I don't think Doctor Who was meant to be ingested at all, was it? Certainly not in its pre-2005 incarnation. It was just there to watch.
Well, it was
the whole ingestion of things as a, you know, as a part of the marketing, as part of the actual production. That's very, very much a more recent.
Well, I don't know. You see, I blame Terence and his wretched target book. That's where it all starts, because suddenly you have your own copy of the show to obsessively read whenever you fancy, and. And Terence quite conveniently fixes some of the plot bits that don't quite work. You know, he stretches this, he elongates that. He gives them a nice opening. Very fond of a coda. You know, so, yeah, this is Terence's fault.
Now, I'm going to push us on to a different subject, which you might be able to help me out with. Okay. Well, you'll certainly have something to say on this. So we during the summer, I took... my eldest children, twins, to see the Horrible Histories movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is surprisingly good, because it's not the first movie that's come from that stable. There was a story a couple of years ago about William Shakespeare, which wasn't so funny. The Horrible Histories movie is very funny. It's got a good cast. And it's about the Romans, if you don't know about this. It's about the Romans. And Bruce, my son, was asking me various things about the Romans, and then asked me if there's any Roman Doctor Who. And I was thinking, well, there's the Romans, there's Rory, there's that whole thing there. And then the Iron Legion jumped into my head, which I haven't read in ages. Yeah. And I described the Iron Legion to him, and he was absolutely gobsmacked.
Yeah. Iron Legion is wonderful. You know, isn't there surprisingly little Roman stuff in Doctor Who when you actually think about it?
Yeah, there is.
It never occurred to me until you said that. You mean there is the Romans? Everyone goes, oh, yes, that's good fun. And then nothing until Rory. So that, God, I mean, that's nearly 50 years later. Someone goes, or 45 years later, oh, yeah, we haven't done the Romans for a while. Crazy, isn't it? Got all those costumes. All those great storytelling. Oh, and there's the light at the end as well. Isn't that the Roman? Or the Eater of Light, the Rona Monroe one.
Yes, there is. There is that one. And there's obviously the Pompeii one, which is Romans, but it's Rome. So it's a little It's still Rome, and it's still Romans. So but you always think of the Romans as David Roman Vage, things Britain,
or whatever. Time. You know, I would have thought that you could have done, oh, well, I suppose there's the Romans in the War Games as well. Oh. Now they're tumbling out the cupboard, the Romans.
Oh, there's those Romans in Day of the Daleks as well. No.
I don't remember. And of course, there's the Iron Legion, which, gosh, that's going to be 40 years old in about 2 weeks' time.
Wow, really? You know, why do you know that fact so well?
Well, because as publisher of Warp Warp, all of these key dates are seared into me. But as much as anything, I remember how thrilling it was, buying that first issue of Doctor Who Weekly. Well, I didn't. I had it bought for me. I would have just gone. Would I have been seven? It was about the time my seventh birthday, and my nan bought me that 12p of pure pleasure. And it is no mistake to say that is the issue that changed everything. Des Skin, what he puts together, the skills, the talent, his mix of stuff. He grabs hold of Doctor Who and he makes a couple of very important decisions. The first is he's not going to do anything about contemporary Doctor Who, which is curious when you think about it. He's only going to do the past. He's going to celebrate the. He's going to have a strip, a backup strip, letters page, a letter from the Doctor, and features on the monsters and the show, and that's it. Oh, plus transfers, lots of transfers. What a publication. Still stands. So I think DWM are doing a big celebration in their next issue. A DVD, a special DVD full of treats, a special supplement. I can't wait to read it. We haven't been involved in it in any way, and I'm quite pleased because it means I get to all. It's like when we drop a Doctor Who, an issue of Warp Off at Doctor Who magazine, they're always. Was kind enough to say this is wonderful. This is like having an issue of Doctor Who magazine we haven't had to work on. And so for us, this is like us having an issue of Warp Warp that we haven't had to work on. So I'm pretty happy. But yeah, Iron Legion, wonderful. Good old Pat Mills pitched it to the BBC in 1977-78. And I think I've seen an outline. I remember Des Skin showing me an outline, like a plot outline for the Doctor and Leela. So it must be sort of, it's probably that sort of season 15, 1978-ish. I seem to remember it worked quite nicely. I think you could have probably filmed it on a BBC budget.
It would be very different, wouldn't it? A complete different scale.
It would be different, but all the guts of it, so I could imagine the opening with robot legionnaires in a little sleepy village. Rome would perhaps quite not look as grand. It would be a combination of a corner of television centre plus maybe, just maybe, some location filming in the British Museum or somewhere with lots of columns. Things like the Colosseum would be a challenge. Things like, but I think you would just do a different version. But the guts of it, all those Imperial throne room scenes with the Emperor and Eronicus, they would all be the same. The slave revolution would be the same. It would just be different. Yeah, I would like to have seen that. But I can see why they turned it down. You know, if we're saying Underworld was a bit ambitious and a little bit flat, you know, Legion would perhaps be beyond.
No comparison, nothing to see here. No, yeah, you're right, yeah.
Yeah,
it is a visually stunning, thanks to Dave Gibbons. Not the idea is just, the whole concept behind it is just really, really what you want in a comic, basically, isn't it? It's like, that's
it's a combination of all, you know, Pat Mills. Pat did an awful. I remember, again, Des had loads of these in his filing cabinet at some point. I remember him seeing the detailed scripts and essentially mood boards that Pat would send in. You know, he didn't just write the script and it'd be very detailed. He had lots and lots of research and papers. Incredible work went into this script. And he would cut out things from like the Sunday supplement magazines and say, I want it to look like this and I want a ballast day and I want. The shopkeeper, I remember seeing a thing where the shopkeeper in the first one looked a bit like someone out of Dickens' novel. He actually cut out a picture of that shopkeeper from a Sunday supplement and said, that's what I want that shopkeeper to look like. Dave Gibbons is, of course, perfect for the strip because Dave has an industrial design background. So everything in there looked solid and believable and credible. So, you know, the Legionnaires look real. They look the technology looked real. You know, Ironicus looked grand and imperious, but also deadly. It's a fantastic piece of work all round. Is it the greatest Doctor Who ship ever made? Possibly, actually. There might be grander ones that come after it. There might be ones that have that tug at our heartstrings in different ways. But without the Iron Legion, you got nothing. Before the Iron Legion, it's mostly TV comic path with a little bit of Jerry Haylock goodness. But let's be frank, most people's, my experience of a Doctor Who comic strip at that time had been if I was unfortunate enough to be bought TV comic and you go, ugh. Mm. Or some of those bizarre strips that you got in the Doctor Who annual, which I've learned to enjoy. They have a charm as you get older. But let's be frank, it isn't the Iron. The first true Doctor Who comic strip is the Iron Legion for me. So that's why it's most important. So yeah. I hope your lad enjoyed it. If he got
I haven't got it out of storage yet. We'll be looking at it soon. He's in the middle of an Alex Rider at the moment. But next on the list.
He'll enjoy that. He also gets Tom Baker. Perfect.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what's clever. Tom Baker's obsession with getting to Benidorm in those early strips. Just at the time. No. Stick with me. Just at the time that modern British families were starting to go abroad on their holidays.
Yeah.
Instead of going to Filey for a week, they were going, let's go to Benidorm or Torrible. So the fact that the Doctor wanted to go to these places. And as you know, I've always wanted to see a story where the Doctor arrives in 70s Benidorm. It is aching to be written. Someone out there clever will do it for me. With the sea devils rising from the sea. That would be nice.
What better? So, yeah, that is Doctor Who and the Iron Legion, which is, I believe it's still available. I haven't seen it for a while on bookshelves, but you'll be able to pick it up on eBay or Amazon
To be brought out endlessly every few years. I think IDW did a deluxe sort of...
Colorized version. Yeah.
And then there's the original Panini version. There's Lord knows how many compilations of it in the 80s. I suppose it's like Genesis of the Daleks. There's a reason it keeps getting repeated. It's so good.
Yeah. So that's the Iron Legion. And I think that probably brings us to the end of this podcast with a K. As noted earlier, we will be back with some more shows for you in the coming weeks and months. We're probably going to be working on a sort of fortnightly, three-weekly basis. There's other stuff going on as well, which I really want to talk to you about. Sadly, I can't tell you at the moment, because if I don't do it, then I will look ridiculous. But until next time, from Gareth and myself, it's goodbye.
Bonjour.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.